Picture that super soft t-shirt you love sleeping in. The one that gets softer and softer the more you wear it. Now you can bring that same lived-in softness to your entire bed with Signature Vintage Wash Sheets from Boll & Branch. This all-new collection is even softer than your favorite t-shirt, with a distinctly relaxed look and feel for your best night's sleep. Just like all Boll & Branch bedding, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets start with the highest quality, 100% organic cotton. The lived-in and feel comes from a small batch washing process, creating a level of softness you've never felt before. And it's not just the feel. Boll & Branch mastered the laid-back aesthetic using a special technique that creates the well-loved look you'll find with vintage jeans. And true to the Boll & Branch hallmark, Signature Vintage Wash Sheets get softer and softer with every wash. Right now, you can get 15% off your first order with promo code ODYSSEY and save on their most relaxing sheets. So head to BollAndBranch.com today. That's B-O-L-L and Branch.com.
You hear that? Your dog knows. Spring is coming sooner than you think. Dog walks, dog parks, playing fetch, all the stuff your dog loves to do with you. But the warmer weather also means that fleas and ticks are coming back. Fleas and ticks are in the grass, in the woods, and even on their dog friends. Fleas are an itchy nuisance, can easily get into your home, furniture, and beds, which can be terrible. Ticks are even worse. They're hard to spot, but can carry disease and get your dog really sick. PetMeds has your furry friend protected with the best products to prevent flea and ticks all year long. PetMeds pharmacists connect directly with your vet to save you time and deliver the best products for your pet. PetMeds offers low prices on all flea and tick meds, including NexGard, Simparica, and more. And PetMeds AutoShip helps you save even more with additional discounts on regular shipments of PetMeds, dog food, and other high-quality supplies. So get ready for all the spring fun now. Visit PetMeds.com and use promo code PODCAST to save 40% on your first auto ship order. That's PetMeds.com and promo code PODCAST.
Welcome to Rise Together. My name's Dave Hollis. I'm the host of this show where we're going to hopefully have you feeling a little more normal in this, the human experience. Maybe see yourself even in some of the stories that are told, or have your appreciation of what it means to be human expanded by someone who's come on as a guest who's had a different life experience. In all of it, we are trying our best in community to learn from each other, to grow, and maybe even have a little bit more compassion for what it's like to walk in each other's shoes. When we do, we all rise together.
Hi. You have heartburn?
Yeah.
What did you eat that gave you heartburn?
Stress.
Stress is the source of my heartburn.
I think it is. I really think it's all the vitamins I'm taking. I'm not kidding you. I actually believe that they get stuck. And I'm a little bit worried that, you know what happens when pills get stuck in your esophagus, right?
No, I don't. Tell me.
They burn your esophagus, your esophageal lining. And yeah, I need to drink a lot of water. Hold on.
Do you think that there's any chance that your conscious thoughts as the captain are signaling to your unconscious thoughts to have a reaction? Are you manifesting esophageal cloggage?
No. No. But since that anxiety thing, there's something with my body that I'm very perceptive, Dave. Perceptive.
Here's the thing, you're very perceptive. And also,
I'm a hypochondriac.
You're a hypochondriac. You just got a brain scan because you were sure that you had a tumor. Yeah. And it's not a tumor.
No. And I didn't think I had a tumor. I thought I just wanted to check to make sure my blood vessels were okay. That's it. Because I was having migraines and seeing spots. You know, it's like when you have a wake-up call, like a panic attack that lands you in the hospital, the reality is every single part of you starts to go, man, I've been putting off all of my checks. Like, I am so busy in my life, and I have been for 15 years, right? To where when something feels off, I have never been the kind of person to go to the doctor. I'm like, I'm fine, I'll get over it. And a panic attack had me in a moment for the first time in my life, feeling like those were my last minutes. Like looking at you, I remember being like, I'm never going to see my kids again. Like I'm happy that it's Dave, but also what's he going to tell my kids? How is this going to like go to my, like, is he going to tell them that I love, like all these thoughts, like the people I realized in that moment that I wish, gosh, this is like such a.
Well, just, I mean, for
we're not going to talk about this.
But we're not going to talk about this. I mean, we can talk about it.
No, I was just saying we weren't going to, and suddenly it's here. But like, it like really quickly, when you feel like you're dying, it becomes super clear what the most important thing is to you.
Yeah.
And they're my kids, and I love you, but my kids are, they're like an extension of me, you know?
As
and
I really was at that moment. Oh no, as it should be. I mean, I will say as like a witness. So this is like end of July, very end of July. Heidi had a panic attack. First panic attack she's ever had. I have never, ever seen anything like what I saw in you experiencing what you did, because the terror in your eyes, the like sureness that you had that you were actually dying, I could never have imagined that it was going to be the way that it was for you, and the urgency with which you were hoping I might get help and everything else. Like, it was scary. It was super, super scary. I've never tried to be so calm in such a high pressure situation in my entire life. But the idea that like your brain is powerful enough to convince you that you are dying in that moment is mind-boggling on some level, because you're such a high performer. You're such a like handles stress well-ish person. And in that situation, there was no like normal thinking. It was all survival thinking.
I think what's more fascinating is not that my brain convinced me that I was dying, because that was easy, right? Like to feel what I was feeling, for anyone who's done it, to actually physiologically feel the things that I feel, when you feel that, you're going to think you're dying. Like I've had more people reach out to me knowing what I felt. And I've been through a lot. I freaking pushed babies out of my lady parts with no epidural, and I didn't think I was dying. The pain of that, I like kidney stones, didn't think I was dying. All of these things, did not think I was dying, but it wasn't even the pain. It was the symptoms, the uncontrollability of the symptoms, right? So the most fascinating thing to me is that because I thought I was dying, so it wasn't my body had me think I was dying, because I thought I was dying, I manifested actual panic. I manifested symptoms that further solidified and ingrained that I was dying. And then it was like, oh my gosh, I'm dying. And then it made the breathing more uncontrollable. It made that like, it was insane.
It was wild. The paramedics ended up coming into the room, and they quickly put you on a blood pressure cuff and a heart monitor. And, you know, there was five of them. And
oxygen thing on your finger.
Yep. And the initial responder, because he ends up saying later on that, man, we actually respond to quite a few panic attacks. People think that they're dying. It turns out they're having a panic attack. And trying to just like reassure you, you're okay. You're having a panic attack in the hope that like, maybe you can control your breathing or convince your brain that this is all that this is. I actually ended up going through the room and I asked each of them, hey, you're a professional. You work as a paramedic. What do you believe that she is suffering from? And each of them said, I believe she's having a panic attack. I believe she's having a panic attack. And it didn't really change the way that your symptoms were presenting, because it took another 2.5 hours of you breathing and being like reassured that you were going to be okay for you to get to okay. And then the next round of the panic attack came back the next morning and we found ourselves in the hospital. But it's just still such a wild thing that when you have something like that happen that you've never experienced before, you're in such an uncharted part of the world that you have no sense of how to handle it or what the hell's going on.
No, and I remember you going around the room and asking, right? And having the people say the thing. But because I was still fighting fade to black, like honestly, like still struggling to not pass out. And I thought, oh, this is me dying. Like I didn't know the difference between passing out and, oh, this is the end of it for me. They don't know I'm like seeing the light, you know what I'm saying? But and having like feeling, I guess, manifesting symptoms in my body that actually felt like heart palpitations and uncontrollable breathing. I still, no matter how much I was deep breathing, I could not get out of it. I, in my mind, was like, they're saying this, but they haven't taken the time to see anything, if anything's underlying, right? And so they left the room and I was like, yeah, this is what most people look like with a panic attack, but there's still something happening with me. So you went to sleep. I didn't sleep at all. And I've done a lot of research since. And one of the worst things you can do when after a panic attack is not sleep, because your body, your brain needs a reset more than ever. Then I released so much adrenaline in that moment. And my body was actually my entire nervous system, my spine, I could feel it just shaking all night. And which is why, as soon as you woke up and the shades were cracked, I immediately went back into a panic attack.
Yeah.
Like when, because I was actually telling you, I don't think I'm okay. And then that was like
When you were convinced that you weren't okay, or that they'd misdiagnosed, or they couldn't have possibly understood how serious it was, because you're feeling things that they couldn't possibly understand. We head to the hospital, and God bless the people in the hospital, because I've never been through an emergency room faster. That like they could see how serious a state you were in. And they immediately got you on the EKG, which was genius, because you were certain. You were so certain that you were having a heart attack. And it was like the doctor came in. He had a Marvel bandana on, bless his heart. And he shook my hand. And he said, good news. This is one of the strongest hearts in the entire state. And I was like, yes, this is good. Please say that again to the woman in the chair. And
but at this point they had already given me Ativan, right? Which is a new thing for me. Had they given me this yet?
They had not given you the medicine yet. We had walked in. The first thing they did was to do the EKG. The second thing, they did the blood pressure, they took the temperature, that, you know, but every single thing, unbelievably, but thankfully, was perfection. Like this guy was like, she is in elite health. And I was like, sir, could you please write that on the chalkboard over here, please? Like, there's like, let's keep on telling her that she is good. Then you got the Ativan, and the Ativan
took. I was still not calm, and you know what it was? They then started saying, "Can I just recount some of this? Are you okay with it?"
Recount away.
They had said, "What do you do for a living?" Remember that? I was starting to calm down. They said, "What do you do for a living?" And then I started going into another panic attack in the middle of the hospital. And like it, that was such an indicator for me that what I do, like I posted about not too long ago, like something that I believe in it, I know it's my calling, right? And I'm diving into this thing that I love so much, but I realized I have dove in so much and so hard in a way that has me disconnected from what's good for me, what serves me, and what serves my people. And I didn't even notice, but that was my thing. So back now, so then they give me the Ativan, which
Ativan, by the way, is like it's an anxiety medicine, but I believe they gave you the amount to usually put a large horse down. I mean, an IV drip. It was an IV drip, and it worked really quickly. And Heidi went to a different universe. I mean, we have the greatest. I mean, I recorded it for posterity.
That one of these days, we have to post this now.
It's one of the most spectacular things I think I've ever just gotten to experience, because one, you were unbelievably calm after having been unbelievably wired, but you were also seeing things that don't exist.
Caterpillars. I was seeing caterpillars.
Yeah. You looked over at my face and you said, I can't see the left side of your face. Oh, wait, there's a caterpillar crawling on your face. And then you saw a horsefly. You named the horsefly. And then you followed it with your eyes across the room until you saw another one. And it was just like, we kept on having the wildest conversations about standing in a mall, standing in a field, standing like wherever you think you are, you're right where you're supposed to be. This is fantastic. I'm trucking.
I remember that. And then I feel like that Ativan was in my system for a week. Like,
one of the things that they did not tell us at the, I mean, just so good news. I mean, like the doctors run this full spectrum of tests. There's now anxiety medication that's helping get what was a very significant episode down into reset mode. And what they didn't tell me, and I think I would have liked to know this, is you're about to have conversations with this woman for the next 24 hours, and she will have no memory of you having said any of what you have said, because we got back into, got you back in bed, and you immediately fell asleep. And about an hour later, you woke up and we had a conversation, and you fell back asleep. About an hour later, you woke up and we had the exact same, you asked the exact same question. And that happened over and over for the next like 12 hours. It was so crazy.
I think it was longer than 12 hours because I remember a couple times the next couple days. I think you were only there one more day.
Yeah.
But that next day in Arizona, when we had gotten home, you had said, I've had this conversation. You weren't mad, but you're like, I have had this conversation with you. So I've even had it twice since you woke up today. And I'm like, what? So I remember a couple times thinking, oh my gosh, did something happen to my mind? Am I always going to be this forgetful? Like it, and that would further ingrain that like something was wrong with me. Right. Yeah. And you had to leave.
Well, no, what was amazing in the hospital, once the Ativan started, you now felt the freedom to represent your expertise as a physician to the physician. And so this doctor walks in and
I thought I had a blood clot. Remember?
You were certain that you had blood clots in your brain. And the certainty of the diagnosis was something that you asserted to him multiple times in the multiple times that he came into the room. So the first time he came in, he was just like, oh no, I am certain we did a test. Your blood has no clots. You are in perfect health. Thank you for coming. And then he came back about 15 minutes later and you had the blood clot conversation with him again. And he was like, oh no. The third time when you brought it up, he said, you know what? I'm about to do rounds. Would you like to come help me diagnose the rest of the patients on the floor? Which I appreciated this man and his humor.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that was interesting. And even as you say this, it's so funny because now just last week, since I got home, I was ordered by my doctor to do a brain scan, to go see a gastroenterologist. Because again, so many symptoms manifest as the result of a panic attack, right? Like things that truly, like even if they were symptoms on a daily basis in my life before panic attack, I don't think I would have even noticed them because I spend so much time busy, right? Either busy with work, busy with you, busy with my kids, all these things. Not a lot of time do I spend busy with myself, which those people watching right now, if you're watching this or listening, whatever, Dave and I are in separate rooms and neither of us have our kids. And part of the reason is a realization as I've, you know, these past however many weeks, months have passed is like one of the things I think most humans were so flooded with stimulus and with things and with to-dos that we don't spend, we're human, what is it? Human doings instead of human beings. And we need that time alone. We need, like, I realized through this that one of the things I'm missing is a connection with myself in a way that doesn't have me being alone and feeling like something's wrong. Cause I've never had that be an issue before, but since a panic attack, when you feel things and experience things that you've never felt or experienced before. And for the first time in my life, actually feeling like actually being aware of what death is, that's what it is.
Yeah.
It's like, I knew I had kidney stones before, all these things that really were painful, but like in my mind, I'm like, oh, there's an issue that's fixable or there's an issue, right? Like, but to not know and to have symptoms that literally went from head to toe and inside and outside, and every single bit of it had me like, oh, this is the end. This is what your body does before you die. One of the things I realized I wanted and needed was time with myself, to like get to know myself, to get to know like what these things mean. But what I was saying is I've had time over the past how many weeks, months, to get like a brain scan done and meet with the gastroenterologist. And everything's coming back totally clear. Like everything.
You're in good health. You're in good health.
I'm in really good health, which puts my brain at ease a little bit, but also reminds me that like, hey, I've spent a lot of years not actually doing a lot of the checkups because I eat healthy, I work out, I do all of the things, but still it's important that we put ourselves first and we do the checkups that we need to and all of that.
For sure. Now, I mean, like mortality motivation is a thing. And I think when people lose a loved one or have a brush with death or whatever, it can do one of two things. It can freak you out and all of a sudden you become a recluse, or it can motivate you to live life while you can because you don't know how many days you got. There's, I think, a little bit of, you know, like it's been interesting, if nothing else for you in these last, whatever, 6 weeks, there's been maybe more of an inventory of, all right, if I recognize that some of the way that life was being lived was complicit in this panic attack having happened, how do I reorganize my life or prioritize different things or create different structure to avoid something that wasn't necessarily sustainable, which is also like a preservation of life kind of thing. I mean, who wants to live an insanely chaotic and busy life all the time? Not I, but I commend you for that, because it's good to have an event like this create something of change so that you can have the things that you care about most, the things that you actually spend time with most.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is here to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify is got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 15% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the U.S. And Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning 24/7 help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odyssey podcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odyssey podcast now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/odyssey podcast.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Well, I think what it did for me more than anything, and we had this conversation last night, is it had me realize, because I've had a handful of times since, people say, what's your vision? What's your dream? What's your goal? Like with regard to career and business, because that's, when you think about it, that's what most of us go throughout life doing, is focusing and finding importance on who we are in the world rather than who we are in our world. Right. And I would almost chuckle and be, I don't want to say annoyed, but like almost shake my head when people would ask me that question. Because I'd had that little brush with death, or I thought, there was such a lack of importance to the question of what's your vision? Like, you need to cast a vision for what you want to do in business, right? I was like, how stupid is that? That people care so much about it, because that was, not even on my mind. Like, I don't mean disrespect to anybody listening. If you've been following me for a while, when I thought I was dying, I didn't think about any of you. I thought about my kids. Like, I literally thought of four people. I thought of my kids. How will this impact them? Did I give them enough? Did I teach them enough? Am I who, like, and I felt every regret of not being there for them the way that I know I can, because I know how good of a mom I am when I'm present. And it's really been over the past year. It's really been over the past year. And so that's where I put most of my focus after. And yeah. You know, like, yeah. I was like, I don't, you know what? And actually my response to Vision for Work, I said, listen, I know most importantly the life, like who I want to be. Like, I realized that like identity and who I am is at the core of all of it. I drew a visual to you last night over the phone. Yeah. Like, that is at the core. And I don't care about my business. I don't, like, in 90 years or 90 years, I'm maybe going to be dead.
But make it to 130. I mean, according to the doctor, you are in such good health that you have a shot at 130, but it's unlikely.
But when I'm 90, it, like, I need to decide first. And I believe that I know, and I talk about this now, but like, I've decided, I've come up with a vision of who I want to be. Like, how I want my life to feel. What do I want it to feel like, taste like, all the things, what people. And I told you, connection with people that I love is the most important thing to me. And also important is connection with myself, right? And part of that connection and being happy and alive, and like, it includes integrity. It includes what I teach, right? Because I love myself when I live in integrity. And when I love myself and I'm living in integrity, I feel I have confidence and I want further connection with people. So those are the things that I realize are at the core, right? And now from there, it's like, hey, I know I have 2 years left with my big kids. 2 years, like a year with Maddox. I have one more homecoming. I have two more homecomings with Marley. And then like, they're out of the house. So that now is like the next layer, right? So at the core is that who I want to be. The next layer is definitely my kids and my lifestyle with them, right? Now, part of a good lifestyle and what I want to teach them is me chasing my dreams, but not at the expense of me being who I want to be for me and being who I want to be for them.
Yeah, right? I mean, I'd sent you back a note of like, they need your presence more than they need your example. And I more mean the example is like example of you chasing your goals. Like, they need that. They're going to get it no matter what, but they need the former more than the latter. And if you only apply them the latter, it doesn't matter, because the absence of presence, you being the greatest hustler of all time, will leave them screwed up, you know, like they need your presence.
Yeah. And I have been a huge advocate of, and I believe it, like, you can be both. You can be both. And what I'm saying right now might not sit well for somebody else, because your balance looks different than mine, and it's okay. It doesn't need to look the same. But for me, and I've ebbed and I flowed, right? Like, it is so important. And I know you had mentioned this before, that you had written it in a book. Like, it is so important for our kids to see us chasing our dreams and to have our kids see us living our best life. Okay. Yeah. And it might look however it looks for anybody, but yes, not at the expense of us being present for them. And like, I don't know if I mentioned this to you last night, or I was just thinking it, but someone's going to raise my kids. Someone is, right? Like, it's either going to be me or a nanny, right? And the reality is, the kids are going to take on the traits and the characteristics of the people they are around the most, the people that they are deepest connected to. Like, they're not going to take on the traits and the characteristic of a parent who's not present, but chasing their dreams and reaching their goals and impacting the world. They are going to become like the ones that they're around the most. Like, you know, our kids, like, sometimes my kids will have sayings that like a nanny has, or Noah, like some of the ways that she talks sounds like your nanny, and we laugh about it, right? That's because they become who they're around. And so I for me now, the realization that it's so important that I have a beautiful balance between dreams and my kids. And even when it's dreams for me, my kids, because they're such a priority, like I need them to know that I would give them up in a second to make sure that they get what they need. Because guess what? When they're gone in 2 years, I can conquer the world. I know my ability to do anything. I can do that when I'm not running out of precious time with them in my home. Yeah. You know?
Well, you just had a brush with it this last weekend. We had homecoming weekend, both of us. And like your reaction to homecoming was emotional at a minimum, because you're having this one, your kids are gorgeous and they've gotten old just in the last couple of years that I've known you. But there's also that reminder when you see them all dressed up and looking like young adults that they're closer and closer to leaving the nest. And I mean, it's a wild thing to have these kind of milestones come and be something that's like both parts, like a celebration and also a little bit like sentimental.
Yeah, it is. You know me though. And I think even before the panic attack, since I met you, I mean, I met you at a phase where it was like, I am giving up work and God and the universe is going to provide a way, because I've spent 12 years not being present for my kids. I've been present to build something for the world. My kids need me, right? Yeah. Because now Maddox and Marley, having been through two divorces, and Cash and Ruby going through their first divorce, like I care more about those kids than I care about any humans on the planet. And you met me at a time where I was kind of, I was there, right? And then got busy again. But even through all of it, there's never been a family moment or a vacation, which we've only really taken one vacation to Hawaii, but, or a holiday where, you know, like it is a very like emotional thing for me. And it's like, when I get close, when I'm able to just meld in and melt into family, the world actually disappears for me. And yeah. I'm like, nothing else matters.
It's so wild. Cause I'm a little envious of what seems like an almost uniquely positive emotional experience for you around these big milestones and holidays. And for me, what is still, I'm still in a both state, in that, and we talked about this at homecoming, like there's something about these big events or these big holidays or the birthday parties or whatever that come up. And I've tended to be the host of the birthday parties. I do like to throw a, you know, big old inflatable slide in the backyard and have 1,000 people come over so that I can feel overwhelmed all afternoon. But there's something about the aftermath of divorce and me still feeling a little bit of this, like, man, these were things that we were supposed to do a different way because of how I thought things were going to, you know, ultimately work out, but didn't. And I'm, you know, I keep on rooting for like, oh, maybe this will be the birthday party where it doesn't still feel like, what the heck, but yeah. I'm still kind of there.
You know, I think it for you, maybe because those weren't things that you manned or like you managed when you were married. I don't know. Maybe it's because it's like now it's an extra chore or an extra task for you. Does that make sense? Like an extra thing that previously you would have shared the load or shared the weight of. And now you're holding the weight on your own is what I mean to say, that there's, and you didn't technically choose your divorce, you know, like you yeah. didn't choose it. So I think you're still processing. That quote is, what messes us up most in life is the idea in our head of how it's supposed to be. Oh, I yeah. think you oh. had an idea in your head from the moment you got married of how these holidays and these big milestones would go. And it's shared responsibility. It's shared, and even not shared responsibility, but it's shared celebration, right? And you right now in me don't have someone that lives half the time in Texas. So when you're going through these things, you don't even have me to celebrate in person with, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, and about, to be honest, like I, you know, Ray and I are not as close as I think I thought we would have been in the aftermath of divorce. And I think there's still a little bit of like, man, it would be cool if we could be, in a more amicable place and actually celebrate. Like, I mean, I am envious of the relationship that you have with your exes. I love the fact that I'm as close to them as I am, and we're not there yet. And maybe one day we'll get there. But, you know, like, we were standing next to each other at homecoming watching Jackson knighted as the Duke of the sophomore class. Congratulations to him being coronated. And I was like, yes, this is cool. What a nice thing that we, like, you know, had 8 seconds next to each other before going our separate ways. It's, you know, I think I want it for my kids. I think I want it for, I think I want, it's also just like the story of my grieving process has been grieving the way I thought things would be. And, you know, it's like shedding, oh no, like grieve what is, grieve what was.
I think you're smarter too, because there's so much of it. Like, for, on Derek's side, none of what we go through is public, right? And I don't really take anything public with Derek. We have so many struggles, but it doesn't make it out there to the world. And so I think that it makes it, it's easier for me. It is much easier. Like, I mean, when Derek and I, we go through stuff all the time, all the time. But like today, for example, and yesterday and this week, we're in a really great place, but it doesn't mean he and I didn't have a fight 2 weeks ago, but we fight like brothers and sisters. And same with me and Chris, we all fight. I think it's like when you're dating, and at least for me, when I was dating a guy and the guy would wrong me and I would tell my mom and dad and my family, it was over. It was over because I just poured fuel on the fire that is that relationship. And yeah. I think because you both are more public people, it makes it harder. Chris and I fight, but no one hears about it. Like, no one knows that Chris and I fight, and we make up and go on. And I think that's been a little more difficult for you.
Yeah. Well, I think too, I probably, if I've maybe made a mistake in the aftermath of divorce when it comes to my children, you know, there's like a term like Disneyland dad, apparently, because I've heard it in the aftermath of, you know, getting them go-karts to distract them from the pain of divorce, or making sure that the birthday party has a huge slide. Like, I think that there are times when I bite off a little more than I ought to chew, because I'm trying in some ways to soften a little bit of what I perceive to be them still grappling, even 2 years later, with the inconvenience or the frustration of divorce. And, you know, part of what probably is frustrating is I'm trying so stinking hard to have them have a good time that I'm doing more than I can actually handle in, you know, allowing everyone, you know, allowing each kid to invite 30 people over to a birthday party when you have 4 kids is idiocy. And I will check the box for being an idiot on, let's
create a like one party. Thing you need to think about, you are creating memories for those kids that I believe will translate to them placing importance in really enjoying times with their kids. Like when you say, you know, you're envious of the way that, like, for me, every milestone is significant and every holiday is significant, and like what my kids, I can't control what they get out of it, but like I can control what I put into it with them. Yeah. Right. I really believe though that it's significant to me and emotional, because it was that way with my mom. I was not to say like it's only because of how my mom was, but my mom was such a good mom. My mom and my dad.
Yeah.
The most important thing to my mom and dad was family. Like, hands down, like nothing else mattered. And they reminded us of this all the time. And they would even, like, when we'd fight as siblings, they would do what I do. I'm like, oh, you're fighting? Well, you're grounded from your friends, because clearly you need to work on your relationship with your brother and sister. You guys go play together. Like, that's very much how they were. And I'm so grateful, because I have a killer relationship with my family.
Yeah.
I have a killer relationship with my mom. And those things, my mom loved dances. Whether she loved it or not, she made us think that she loved it. My mom was there. Like, holidays were a big deal. And I am, as I get to provide those moments for my kids, I am brought back to how it felt to have a parent or parents that made it significant and important. And I'm trying to recreate that for my kids. And yeah. It's a nostalgic experience. Yeah. And I'm sad that I can't have them forever, you know?
In the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale platform where each piece is carefully inspected by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. Use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Louis Vuitton, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
If you're in the market for investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry, Rebag is the answer. Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace where each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts to ensure quality and authenticity. If you're in the market, use Rebag to buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermes, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. Shop today at Rebag.com. That's REBAG.com. And use promo code REBAG10 for 10% off your first purchase.
You just made me think of something because I have two children who in the last week both lost their phones.
Yeah.
I want to talk about like prison yard outbreaks of upset humans. Take two phones away and just see what happens when they are as attached to these stinking devices as they are. But it is actually, it's wild how different behavior can be in like 3.5 seconds when the phone is not an option. It's crazy to me. It makes me want to take the phone away even more.
I agree. Like, and I think every child's a little bit different, but like for some of my kids, one of them in particular, because they all have different reactions. Cash loves his technology, but like there's a little bit of a detox period of time. And when I can get past him not being on it for days at a time, he's a different child.
Ford's the same way. Ford is now the influence that he has. It's almost like a little bit, now he's not watching anything because I've got an ability to see the content that he's looking at. It's not risque necessarily, but it's crude and molten, like kind of semi-disrespectful at times, the way that people are treating each other. And I think that just it's exposure. Like if you're exposed to someone who's disrespectful, guess what? You're likely to be a little less respectful to the adults in your life. And the absence of screens change a little bit of the persona that they tip into when either they're threatened and they don't feel like they're getting what they need, or they're feeling themselves and they want to kind of puff their chest out a little bit.
Well, I think the absence of screens allows more interaction and presence and consistency from parents.
Also,
I know that's for me, because like a screen is a babysitter for a lot of the time. I'm not saying that's right, but like a screen keeps a child occupied, right? So when I always tell my kids, like, you don't understand, when I ground you or I pull something away or you lose a privilege, like you might think I'm being mean or what, like your world, you need to understand my world just got harder too, because I now have to make sure that you are following those rules, because it's like the inconsistencies in parenting are where like kids will find any little gap or any loophole. And the second they see it, they're like, oh, there's mom's weakness. When she's on her phone, I can ask her a question. I can ask it in this way. And then I can get away with what I know I'm not supposed to do again, you know?
Yeah.
So it does make it harder, because I have to then, when I commit to grounding or losing a privilege, I am also committing to being a more present parent, because I got to follow up on that. I got to follow through.
No, there were more games of catch. There was a board game on a kitchen table. There were more conversations, which, by the way, they're all great, but also in a world where I'm busy and they get home from school at 3:30 in the afternoon, it's a little easier, of course, when they have a screen that they're able to spend time with until 5 p.m. I'm not complaining about it, because guess what? We had a great week. But also, it does end up, you know, holding them accountable and responsible does end up also putting something of a tax on you. You still get something good out of it, but it's not easier necessarily. You're like, you're ruthless though. When you say this is what's happening in a punishment, you have to be careful what comes out of your mouth, because you will never go back on it. Oh,
the thing is, I can't. Why? Like, you're going to be like, good Lord, Heidi, we're going to this. We are. I'll tell you why I can't, because integrity is so important to me. Like, I personally, I have to know that my word is valuable. And when I say something, I have to know that I can follow through, or else I will not love myself. Like, this is what this is at the basis of transformation that Chris and I have taught for 15 years, or however long it's been, 12, 13 years. But that goes with my kids too. Like, and I know if I say something to my kids and I don't follow through, I'm not going to respect my authority and they're not going to respect my authority. Right. And so it's like, which means I don't want to deal with a pun, I almost have to act like I don't see it. Cause if they know that I saw it and they know that they got away with it, right, then I lack authority in what I do.
Yeah.
And I have to be careful about, like, did you ever hear the story when I broke Maddox's iPhone?
Is this safe for the internet?
I posted it.
Oh, okay.
But I mean, that was before I had some of the haters that I have. But I did post it. So here's fresh content for you guys. You ready for this? Chris and I were married at the time. And here's the thing. Chris is more ruthless than I am. And I appreciate it that you see Cash and Ruby, very respectful kids who are, and not respectful in their confined way, but they know who they are. They are confident in who they are. Chris and I are very much aligned in how we parent, which is part of why co-parenting is so easy, you don't know this story?
I don't know that I know this story.
Oh, I'm going to have to go back through. I'm going to have to ask Chris. He'll remember the basis of it, but there was something I caught Maddox lying. I mean,
integrity.
This was, how old's Maddox? 17. So he might've been 12 at the time. And I had essentially said, if I catch you doing, like, we had caught him in a few things. I don't remember what it is, but I said, if I catch this happening again, I'm letting you know right now, I'm going to smash your phone. That calmly, literally that calmly. And he's like, okay. Got it. And I feel like it was like he wasn't allowed to have a Snapchat and he had a Snapchat or something, but that had been happening.
Feels right.
And so I caught him lying again in whatever it was. And this is a week or so later, and I had just asked him the question. He had just convincingly told me a story. I believe him. I go back. The truth is presented. I literally walk into the bathroom. He's showering. I rip the curtain open. I'm like, where's your phone? And it was right there on the counter. I took it. I said, what did I say I was going to do if I caught you lying again? This calm. And he's like, you're going to smash it. I'm like, buddy, I got to do it. Bam! I like smash the phone. And I'm like, and he's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I have Apple Care. So it cost me $79 to teach him a lesson. But I had to. I had told him I was going to smash his phone. And he didn't believe me. And then he actually lost his phone. He lost it for a while.
I mean, number one, fantastic parenting. That's a great story. Number two, you and I are very different in parenting. We're going to do a full podcast on that sometime. The only times that I feel like I've had to negotiate with myself is when we are driving to a destination that every person in the family is looking forward to, and one person is trying to ruin the experience. And I have suggested that we turn this baby around if that person continues their bad behavior. And then then they act up again. And I'm like, God, what am I supposed to do now? I mean, I know what I'm supposed to do. I'm supposed to turn around and ruin the entire vacation for everyone.
Nope, you're not.
I'm actually going to throw them on the ground and smash them.
No. You have, that's why you have to be careful with what you threaten. So
Oh yeah, no, I understand. All right, you have a meeting. I have to go to the bathroom.
I have 8 minutes left of meeting. I got to get on.
Hey, not bad for a podcast where we didn't even talk about what we're going to talk about for the most part until we turn the microphones on. All right, good work. You're gorgeous.
I'll let you go through and figure out what stays in and what doesn't.
I think it's all going to stay in except for that very last part where I was being a dick.
I think you should keep it in. I think you should keep all of it in. You weren't being a dick, but because the truth, like, let's talk about that for a minute.
Okay.
The truth is, how annoying is it sometimes? We all have pet peeves about the people that we're with. Every time you tell me an issue, I have a solution. Like, no one wants to have a solution every time. That's annoying.
You know what? I mean, here's the thing. There are some days where I just want to be able to share an emotion that I'm experiencing and let it just be received and seen. And 100 times out of 100, you are there with gravity immediately. And sometimes I can't even finish explaining the feeling before you've given me the remedy, which is also like, it's fast acting. It helps me think about how to solve it before I've even fully processed the emotion. And I appreciate you for that.
You know what? At least we can laugh at it. We can laugh at it.
We can laugh. Thanks for dealing with me. What's that?
Thanks for dealing with me.
Oh man, dealing with you is a pleasure.
I love you.
I love you too. All right. We'll see you next week on the Old Rise Together podcast. Bye, friends.
Bye.